God said, I need somebody willing to get up before dawn, milk cows, work all day in the fields, milk cows again, eat supper, then go to town and stay past midnight at a meeting of the school board. So God made a farmer.
My administration will be focused on three very important words. Jobs, jobs, jobs.
This man must be a minister, a social worker, a diplomat, a tough guy, and a gentleman. And of course he'll have to be a genius because he'll have to feed a family on a policeman's salary.
From this day forward, it's going to be only America first. America first. We, the citizens of America, are now joined in a great national effort to rebuild our country and restore its promise for all of our people. Because today, we are not merely transferring power from one administration to another, or from one party to another, but we are transferring power from Washington, D.C., and giving it back to you, the people.
Hold on to your seats. Buckle up for safety. You are now entering another dimension with the Scott Adams Show.
And that's right. My name is Scott Adams. You're listening to The Scott Adams Show, and I want to thank everybody for tuning in today. I'm joined by the lovely Leonora Cravotta. Hello, Leonora.
Good morning, Scott.
So we have an interesting show today. We're going to be bringing to you a couple of tributes to teach the Democrats a lesson in what makes a farmer.
Mm-hmm.
And also we're going to talk about their debates and all the rigging that's going on. We're going to talk about the pardons for Donald Trump. Blagojevich is released. You know, he was a Democrat, by the way. Blagojevich was
a Democrat. Yes, he was a Democrat. He was the one who was accused of trying to sell Barack Obama's Senate seat. He was an Illinois governor.
Right, but he got way over-sentenced.
Way over-sentenced.
And when it comes to all things Barack Obama, anybody who stands in the way of taking Barack Obama down, which is how he wound up in jail, is that everybody was getting paid off but him. Yeah. Somehow, Blagojevich was kind of in the mix of this Chicago corruption. And then what happened was he was like, well, I'm going to get a piece of this too, right? I'm going to get some money. And next thing you know, he didn't get any money, right?
Mm-hmm.
They left him out of the pie. Rahm Emanuel just kind of stiffed him. And, you know, Rahm Emanuel wasn't mayor then, but Blagojevich was governor, and the Senate seat was vacant. And in Chicago, in Illinois, here comes this guy out of nowhere that's never traveled, could only speak, you know, Muslim and English, and that was Barack Obama, and found his way into the presidency, you know, being surrounded by people that hate America. No, not goddamn, God bless America.
Well,
America.
He was groomed from the beginning. I mean, there's no doubt about that.
Okay, this guy came out of nowhere, launched his Senate seat in William Ayer's house, the guy from the Weather Underground that wanted to blow up Americans, and somehow we elected this fool.
You know, I've said this before. He was the Manchurian candidate.
Yeah,
I mean, although, of course, the movie The Manchurian Candidate, the villains are the Republicans. But in this particular case, it's the other way around.
Well, everybody got paid off but Blagojevich. So Blagojevich is on a recording and he's like, I want to get my cut. And they're like, well, we got you. You're going to be our scapegoat is what
right,
you're going to get.
And he was forever the scapegoat in the tracksuit.
Mm-hmm. That, well, that's
the
right.
That's the image we all have of him is in being in his tracksuit.
You remember the tracksuit.
Yeah, very well.
That's
yeah.
funny. All right. So he's doing what he was in for, I think, 12, 14 years. He did 9?
Yep. And I think he appealed to try to get out and earlier, and he did not get out earlier. But now, you know, Donald Trump has commuted his sentence, so which is, you know, which is good news for him.
And Donald Trump said, you know, it was a horribly rigged trial, horribly rigged system. And this guy was a political well, you know, we look at refugees and they come to us for mercy, right? These refugees, Ilhan Omar would be one, a political prisoner, right?
Yeah.
And they say, well, we're...
They would be seeking political asylum. That's the terminology.
Exactly. And so we're starting to actually create a number of these people by the Democrats. I mean, I never thought that I would live in a country where we would have political prisoners.
Right.
But we are having that. We are seeing how that happens
right.
for the first time.
So Blagojevich originally had a 14-year sentence, and he actually served about 8 years of it. And he was convicted of 17 counts of corruption, which included, as we've already said, trying to sell the Senate seat recently vacated by then-Senator Barack Obama. So, you know, President Trump's comment was he'll be able to go home to his family after serving 8 years in jail. That was a tremendously powerful, ridiculous sentence, in my opinion, Trump said. And you know who else he pardoned? Remember Michael Milken, the junk bond king from the 80s?
Now he's been long out of jail.
He's been long out of jail because he originally was sentenced to 10 years in prison and a $600 million fine. He actually only served 22 months. He was out because of good behavior and testimony that he provided against former employees. In other words, if you flip, you get a better deal. So he's now 73, and he was barred from trading securities because of his conviction. And since his release from prison, he's become known for his charitable giving. He has funded research for cancer treatment and other illnesses considered to be life-threatening. So he was actually referred to in 2007 in a Fortune magazine article as the man who changed medicine. And he's been out of prison since 1993. But getting the official pardon, I think, means a lot in terms of your personal conscience.
How about Bernie Kerik?
Yeah, Bernie Kerik, the police commissioner, who apparently was involved, was accused of bribery. So
once again,
which I didn't even remember that. Now that I'm thinking,
he
about
was
that.
Overcharged.
He was overcharged. Yeah.
If you're a Republican in this country and you make a mistake, you slip of the tongue, you're screwed.
Yeah.
It's all there is to it, and you know what makes me so happy that Trump is president is this is all changing.
This is all
you know
changing.
What 190 judges.
Yeah.
190 judges. Are going to change that.
Yeah.
And also the fact that you have someone like William Barr, who, by the way, they're writing up in the news a lot of propaganda. And what they're suggesting, what they're saying is that William Barr was very close to resigning. They were saying he was close to resigning because of Trump's tweets.
Again, now, who's saying that?
I read many sources that said that was
Buckus.
That was Buckus. It's not true. And don't believe it. And so basically, it's a disinformation is what they're doing.
Oh, well, that's it. That's what they call it. They call it propaganda. They call it fake news, to put it the way President Trump has expressed it.
That's right. So, you know, here's what I think about this. I think this. They're going forward with the sentencing for Roger Stone. They're mm-hmm. not giving a delay. They're not revisiting the scene. They're not taking a second look at the case. Mm-hmm. You know, Tamika Hart.
Yes, the foreman who was anti-Trump, who called Trump a Klan president.
What we know in the public is enough to revisit that case
right.
and give him a new trial. And I'm talking about Roger Stone
here. Of course.
And there's just no reason why they wouldn't give him a new trial. There was four prosecutors that were part of the Mueller investigation that were considered to be corrupt.
Mm-hmm.
And they're looking into it. So this is all going to fly over. He's probably going to get sentenced Thursday, which is tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And people are going to be very unhappy about it, and they're going to wonder what's going on. But he's only going to have to do a little bit of jail time if he does any. And what's going to happen is not only was what Trump did yesterday mm-hmm. with Blagojevich, Milken, Kerik, and I think there were, you know...
And there were others.
Yeah. those are just the big names. But I think that was a case where he was basically going to water it down. Now, when you compare the commutations and the pardons
yeah.
to Obama. He's 2,000. He's got about 400 pardons and 1,700 commutations. The commutations are really the key.
Mm-hmm.
You pardon, like for Michael Milken or Bernie Kerik, they're out doing television and everything. They're fine with their life.
It's more of a psychological thing.
Yeah, it's expunging your record. It's just a cosmetic thing.
And as you're somebody who's in the sunset of their lives, it's more of a personal thing.
It's a token. It's a gesture.
It does it because it's not like they're out looking for a job at this point.
And it's not like they're trying to get out of jail. Commutation right. is the key.
Well, of course.
That's the one where Alice Johnson got released.
And that's the whole issue with the criminal justice reform and giving people a second chance, giving them an opportunity where they can go out into the workforce and start anew, even though they've made mistakes in the past. And that's, again, that goes back to Christian principles of renewal and redemption. And, you know, and I think that you see that a lot with this president.
So we've been tracking the well-being of Ryan Newman from Daytona 500,
mm-hmm.
That last lap that just was a disaster. Congrats to Hamlin. You know, he won. But, you know, when we were watching the Daytona 500 and Ryan Newman was first going into that final lap.
Yeah.
And his car got pushed and then he got into that horrible accident. We're gonna go ahead and we're gonna go through that that commercial. But that break. And one of the things was that, well, we thought there was no way he was going to survive. And now he's talking, and he's, I don't want to say he's walking, actually.
Well, we don't
he's
know
talking,
that.
And he's talking to his wife, and he's talking to his doctors. and that's a good sign. That was the latest I've read, that he's basically kind of, you know.
Severe injuries, but not life-threatening. Those were the key words.
Well, that's the old news. The new news is he's talking.
Right.
And he's alert, and he's awake.
Yeah.
And that's that. That's why I, you know, brought that up. So here we got this Joker. Man, what a dummy this guy is. This is a Bloomberg guy.
Yeah.
What a moron.
Age of Aquarius.
You know, yeah.
You want to play that?
Yeah.
Harmony and understanding.
Okay, I have to... I have to regroup because
to regroup.
I wasn't even going to play that one.
You should play it.
I'm going to play that one now.
And full disclosure, while you're playing it, I am an Aquarius because, as our listeners remember, my birthday was a few weeks ago.
All right. Since we're skipping over a commercial, we can do this.
Yeah, play it.
But I'm going to play, actually, this commercial. So Trump comes out with the commercials.
Yeah.
So he didn't come out with the commercial. Some guy. I'm telling you what, Leonora.
Yeah.
Trump's army is not an army of one, man. It is an army. It is something that the Don Lemons and the Brian Stelters and the Jake Tappers and the Rachel Maddows of the world created with their hatred and their disinformation and their gaslighting of America and these Sam Donaldsons of the world and Dan Rathers and these other pieces of crap. I'm telling you, these people... I get these looks from Leonora when I do that.
It's the choice of verbiage that I'm frowning at.
I'm being tame. But no, really, you know, these people have been gaslighting America for a long time, and America sees that they have an opportunity with this new leader, Donald Trump, and they're fighting back. And so what?
The forgotten man, the forgotten woman, exactly what he spoke about on the campaign trail.
He's not even paying for this ad, but this guy named Keep America Great Again War, he put together this beautiful. Now, I don't know how this is going to portray over radio because
versus the visual, but.
Yeah, it's visual. But
okay. Well, you can explain it. Why don't you do that?
I'm doing it.
There you go.
So you got Mini Mike, all right? And it's an illustration of Mini Mike,
yeah.
You know? So Mini Mike is at the podium, and his head is peeking over the podium.
Right.
And he's talking about how dangerous he is to Trump, right?
Right.
And then Trump's foot comes in. Boom! You know, clobbers him. Rocks go everywhere. And it's just amazing. So I'm going to try to play it. I hope this comes across well. I wasn't going to play this one. Then we're going to play the Aquarius video clip. It's real short, which is weird because it makes Bloomberg look to be like, a weirdo. And And then we're going to go into the farmer.
Before that, we'll probably talk about the debate a little bit.
Okay. All right, here we go.
Now, if I were from Texas, I might say Donald Trump is scared as a cat at the dog pound. But since I'm from New York, I put it this way. We're scaring the living hell out of him. And we're just starting right now.
And there goes his foot. Trump's foot. Boom. And then Trump Pence can keep it.
Not at all.
It's great. You got
to
see it.
I think you got to see it, but you have to look at all the stuff that goes on top of him while he's speaking, and he gets kind of crushed. And
yeah.
It's,
all right.
It just makes him look.
So
now you're going to play the Aquarius one?
Yep. It's so weird.
It's really weird. Well, first of all, we are in the season of Aquarius, and also it was just his birthday. He's February 14th. So he's talking.
Well, we were down at South Carolina.
Yes.
And we had two birthdays to celebrate,
right,
my dad and his wife. And
they're Aquarians, and I'm Aquarius.
Wait, you are?
January 31st.
I didn't know that.
All the listeners who wrote in to wish me happy birthday a few weeks ago.
Okay, I didn't know that.
He's just being silly, folks.
All right, here we go.
You fellow Aquarians, I just want you to know that we are thoughtful, we are independent, and even keel. And it will not surprise you to know that our current president is not an Aquarian, he's a Gemini. I knew you wouldn't be surprised.
I've always called it Gemini. He's calling it Gemini. I think that actually, you know, back in the Apollo days and... Mm-hmm. You know, in the days of the birth of our space, NASA.
Yeah.
I think that there were a lot of people that used to call it Gemini. I just never got past that.
I have a brother
that's a Gemini.
Right. Right?
I always referred to him as a Gemini.
Gemini is the twins, so who knows what he's trying to imply by this.
Gemini.
Maybe he's trying to say that he's got a split personality or something.
He doesn't even pronounce it right, but... But for a guy to sit there and talk about astrology and say, that's why you should elect me, is I'm an Aquarius.
I'm an Aquarius, yeah. The last time we heard all about astrology was when Nancy Reagan was the first lady and everybody made fun of it. So I guess now it's cool.
All I know is I'm a Libra. And it says that the two best signs for Libra are Aquarius and Gemini. And they're equal. So I get along with Trump and you.
There you go. But it also says that you'd get along with Bloomberg, so you're not making your case.
Whatever. But here we go. Let's see. I want to play this clip here, and then we're going to get into the farmer. This clip is absolutely amazing. Okay? You got to hear it. And this is about Trump fighting back. And I want you to hear this clip.
Tremendous corruption against me. If we feel there's corruption... We have a right to go to a foreign country. And just so you know, I was investigated. In my campaign, I ran. Okay, me, in my campaign, I ran. I won. I was investigated. You won't say that, will you? I was investigated. And they think it could have been by UK. They think it could have been by Australia.
They think
it could have been by Italy. So when you get down to it, I was investigated by the Obama administration. I was investigated. So when these people talk, but as far as I'm concerned, what I want to look at and what we want to investigate, anything having...
Do you get the impression that the media is screaming like out loud in the background there?
Well, they are.
They don't want the truth.
There's also a chopper in the background, so there's another reason for the screaming.
But they're trying to bury the truth, right? Now, I want to play this one. This clip is from Donald Trump as well, and I quoted this one. They unsuccessfully tried to take down the wrong person. You got to hear this. This is unbelievable. This is Donald Trump.
Is punishable by death. You've accused your adversaries of treason. Who specifically are you accusing of treason?
Well, I think a number of people, and I think what you look is that they have unsuccessfully tried to take down the wrong person. If you look at Comey, if you look at McCabe, if you look at probably people higher than that, if you look at Strzok, If you look at his lover, Lisa Page, his wonderful lover, the two lovers, they talked openly. You know, they didn't use their private server because they didn't want to get caught. So they used the government server. That was not a good move. He talked about the insurance policy just in case Crooked Hillary loses. And that didn't work out too well for them. So you look at them, they want an insurance policy so that should she, for any reason, lose, remember, 100 million to one. Maybe he said 100 million to nothing. But should she lose, we'll have an insurance policy and we'll get this guy out of office. And that's what they said and that's what they meant. That's treason. That's treason. They couldn't win the election. And that's what happened. And that's what's happening right now, because without the treason word, I guess. But that's what's happening now. They don't feel they can win the election. So they're trying to do the 1,000 stabs. Keep stabbing. Let's have a financial. Let's have. And if you look for $40 million, I would think seriously that Bob Mueller and his group of 18 killers have gone over my taxes. They've gone over my financial statements to a level that nobody has gone over them before. And they were not discussed even. They weren't even discussed or brought up. I have great statements. Okay, what else?
Folks, he was making it.
So that to me is absolute. And I want to play one more clip. And this one is about, this is a black pastor, okay? And this is, how are you going to be a woke church if you don't know that Margaret Sanger, founder of Planned Parenthood, set out to exterminate the Negro population? So one of the big things that's happening, we're going to talk about the Democratic election, right? Mm-hmm. Is, you know, they're trying to fight tooth and nail to get back what they've lost with the black voter.
Yeah.
And this pastor nails it. I mean, this is a guy, this is not a guy that was a all-the-time Republican. Mm-hmm. He has woken, and here.
Or as a black minister, would you please explain why you haven't explained to your told your congregation of the evils of Planned Parenthood? Everybody's talking about being woke, and you didn't know that Margaret Sanger. You didn't know that Margaret Sanger said this. We don't want the word to go out that we want to exterminate the Negro population. Margaret Sanger, founder of Planned Parenthood. Now, this was written in 1939. So how are you going to be woke? How are you going to be a woke church and don't know this? This is old.
It's old news.
You bishops and pastors and leaders out there, if you haven't told your congregation about the number one killer of African Americans, an organization that kills more African Americans every 2 weeks than the Klan did in its entire history.
Wow.
You are not qualified to use the word woke. For you are the epitome of being asleep. You're asleep at the wheel.
I got goosebumps when I heard that.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, that was just, you know, that's not even in the sort of in the context of the topics we're talking mm-hmm. about today. But I ran across it yesterday and I had to post it. I was just like, wow, that guy nailed it. And the way he said it mm-hmm. and the, you know, what it made me feel, I said, I have to share it.
No, it's powerful stuff. Although I hate that word woke. It's been so overused.
Yeah, well, he's kind of making fun of it,
yeah,
right?
Well, of course.
I mean, he's basically saying, you know, get out of my office with this word woke. You know, this word woke, well, what is woke? What is that? Mm-hmm. You know, it's BS.
Yeah.
So you seem like you have something to say.
I just think it's just more evidence of people that are elitist trying to speak down to the common man and failing badly. I mean, the woke is the avocado toast set. You
so
know, that's people talking about issues and not really understanding them.
I was saying to you, I said, it almost like, you know, Trump does seem godsend. You know what I mean? He does. I mean, like he seems like he steps in something and he just walks on water. Everything he does works. And all these things that are happening are bigger than life.
Yet he's being persecuted just as Jesus was persecuted.
Right. But
so, but he survives. And the thing is, it's because he understands people and he is, you know, speaking to the common person. He's speaking to the forgotten man, speaking to the forgotten woman. And the reason why he became the president is because nobody was addressing them.
And you and I were talking and I said, you couldn't, if you were sitting around, because I don't know, I think like this quite a bit. And I think of being like one of the writers at Saturday Night Live.
Right.
And just sitting around a table looking for jokes, looking for sketches, looking for, you know. And I said to myself, and I was saying to you, you know, off air, I said, if you were to try to draw up a white elitist, it would be the way Bloomberg is behaving these days. It would be, you know, you put a seed in a, you know, and you put the dirt over the seed and you let the plant grow, or you put the widget into the wheel and you turn the arrow and the thing turns. But, you know, for the smart people that have a, you know, know how to work a computer, there's more gray matter there to figure out the AI and how to get people to manipulate their thoughts. And I'm like, whoa, are you kidding me?
Well,
you just admitted that? Because, you know, by the way, he wasn't nothing for nothing, but he was trudging on Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell and his two their two sisters. Mm-hmm. That they were into mind control. They were into search engine manipulation. They were into all this crap.
Right.
And so what I'm saying is what he's talking about, and I mean on a higher plane, is he's talking about AI, artificial intelligence, and he's saying that to get the computer to impress thought and to is basically to say to manipulate your mind.
Well, he's also on a more basic level just talking about the skill sets needed for the information age, and in doing so he's patronizing people, because in order to be a politician you need to succeed in communicating to people. If you look at the way he has communicated from that footage that we've pulled out, also I have a recollection of a big snowstorm when I was living in New York in which he was very patronizing. It took place around President's Day. Well, I remember he was addressing the media, because it had to do with this, you know, the availability of the workers to clean the streets or something. And if I recall correctly, he was like trivializing what it involved to just, you know, clean up the streets of New York. And he was speaking in a way that was demeaning. And it stuck with me. And you still continue to see this. We do not want a leader that speaks to us in a way that is patronizing. Now, we talk about presidents being the father of the country. There's a big difference between a father that concept that's protective and somebody who's just lecturing at you. And that's what you're getting from Bloomberg. You know, and nowhere did we see it more on stage in full bloom than with his attacks against the farmer and the factory worker this week.
By the way, we just had a text from one of our listeners come in, and they wanted to get a copy of the pastor who talked about Planned Parenthood.
Yeah.
And I told him it's on my Twitter feed. Yeah. But you know what? I'm gonna play it one more time for him.
Okay.
Because he liked it so much, and I like it too.
Okay.
So it's worth a listen. Hold on.
As a black minister, would you please explain why you haven't explained to your told your congregation of the evils of Planned Parenthood? Everybody's talking about being woke. Woke! Woke!
And
you didn't know
woke, right?
That Margaret Sanger? You didn't know that Margaret Sanger said this? We don't want the word to go out that we want to exterminate the Negro population. Margaret Sanger, founder of Planned Parenthood. Now, this was written in 1939. So how are you going to be woke? How are you going to be a woke church and don't know this? This is old. This is old. It's you bishops and pastors and leaders out there, if you haven't told your congregation about the number one killer of African Americans, an organization that kills more African Americans every 2 weeks than the Klan did in its entire history, you are not qualified to use the word woke. For you are the epitome of being asleep. You're asleep at the wheel.
I particularly love the way he ends that. I cannot hear that enough, by the way. I just think it's an amazing thing. What did Pat Kinean say there, Leonora?
He says, thanks, powerful. Yeah. And speaking of powerful.
I have the farmer I want to queue up.
Yeah. And
it's, well, this is the short version.
And then we'll read the long version.
Yes. And you're going to read that. And okay. Here's the thing about this. Mike Pence tweeted this out. That was what was significant about it.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Oh, you mean the one you just played?
No, the one I'm about to play.
The one you're about to play. Okay,
right.
Go ahead.
And it's kind of interesting because when I retweeted Mike Pence, and, you know, it's a really great little, you know, montage of photographs, I said, excerpts from So God Made a Farmer, said by Paul Harvey, are found in the intro of the Scott Adams Show. As is Trump's transferring power not from one party to another, but from Washington back to you, the people. I'm sending this to Mike Bloomberg now. That's what I tweeted, right? It was sort of to be fun, right? And, but, you know, I remember when I was just so inspired when Trump gave his inauguration speech. Mm-hmm. I understood that this man is a serious man. He is not a joker. He is not a con man. He is not a real estate mogul. This guy, I understood every word. He meant every word.
Yeah, of course. I knew
it at the time when I heard it. And I was taking this guy seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like Brian Stelter could take Avenatti seriously and get it wrong. And that's him. The difference is we take Donald Trump seriously and we got it right. And the fact is that... when I chose, I edited the intro to the Scott Adams Show myself. I did it. That was my own personal piece that I put together. And the idea was the policeman,
yep,
the farmer, and transferring power not from one party to another, because we've been doing that for 100 years in Washington. That's why we have a deep state. Okay? But I said... The part that moved me the most was when Trump said, we are not transferring power from one party to another. We are transferring power from Washington back to you, the people. And what Paul Harvey was all about was about the people.
The common man.
And I have always said, and I always will say that, you know, you cannot have a Bernie Sanders if you can't finance socialism. You can't finance socialism without capitalism. And, you know, socialism squanders the wealth. And then you end up with nothing but poverty and power and two sectors of two desperate things, you know, power elite and the pauper.
Well, and Democrats worry about how are we going to spread the golden eggs around. Republicans care about the health of the goose.
Yeah, that's right. But I've always said also, remember when we were coming back from Italy and I had this profound thing about the middle class and I said, well, that is it. I said, I was sitting on a train in Europe, traveling somewhere, and this thought was running through my head as I was looking around at all the people around me and their heads were down. And I said, this is what's happened to Europe, is it no longer has this middle class. It has the worker and it has the elite. The power elite, it's lost its middle class, and that it lost it to socialism. And so what I'm saying is, I came back with this profound thing, and I said, you know, the light bulb went off in my head, and I said, you know, that's why you cannot have to have. So if you have socialism, you cannot have a middle class. You cannot have a strong, vibrant middle class And also have socialism, because it's the power elite that kiss up to the elite, right? The emerging elite that kisses up to their boss and the power elite. And then you have the worker bee and the immigrants and the migrants and the refugees and all the, and you have this middle class that's fighting to sustain itself. And what Trump, what Obama was doing, and that's why this thing with Obama coming into play is so important, because he's talking about taking claim for the economic boom. No, he was saying that manufacturing jobs are never going to come back. And that was the key, because so long as he gets you to believe that you no longer have hope in the middle class, then you are going to either have to bow down to the government or you're going to be the power elite, one of the two. And if you haven't gone to Yale and you weren't part of Skull and Bones, well, then forget about it. You're never going to be that person. So you're going to be the worker. You're going to get the shaft. And it's the middle class that's on the margins that basically says, you're not going to tell me that this pond in my yard is a lake for your climate change initiative. You're not going to tell me what color white picket my picket fence can be. I want it to be white. And you want it to be pink because you want to somehow tell my children that they don't need to think about gender. You can't tell me what religion I need to pray. You can't tell me where I send my kids to school and what they should learn. You cannot indoctrinate my family. And it's the middle class on the margins that stands up with their gun in their back, their gun in their cupboard, and their bills on the kitchen table. And you cannot tell these people what to do. They have a mind of their own. They're independent thinkers, and they vote their conscience, and they vote their beliefs, and they pass it along generation to generation. And it's this estate tax and all these other things we're going to be hearing tonight in the debate that, where you want to tax and tell people what medical they can have and all these different things. Open borders are good and abolishing ICE is a good idea. No, all this stuff is bullcrap. And so the issue is, and Leonora's telling me to speed it up. Okay, thank you. All right. It's hard to do it when, but all right. So, you know, but that is the point. Yeah. And I want to play this farmer because this part is actually very important. And it's something that was retweeted yesterday by Mike Pence.
Looked down on his planned paradise and said, I need a caretaker. So God made a farmer. God said, I need somebody willing to get up before dawn, milk cows, work all day in the fields, milk cows again, eat supper, then go to town and stay past midnight at a meeting of the school board. So God made a farmer. God said, I need somebody willing to sit up all night with a newborn colt and watch it die, then dry his eyes and say, maybe next year. I need somebody who can shape an axe handle from a persimmon sprout, shoe a horse with a hunk of car tire, who can make harness out of hay, wire, feed sacks, and shoe scraps, who planting time and harvest season will finish his 40-hour week by Tuesday noon and then painting from tractor back put in another 72 hours. So God made a farmer. God said, I need somebody strong enough to clear trees and heave bales, yet gentle enough to yean lambs and wean pigs and tend the pink-combed pullets, who will stop his mower for an hour to splint the broken leg of a meadowlark. So God made a farmer. It had to be somebody who'd plow deep and straight and not cut corners. Somebody to seed, weed, feed, breed, and rake, and disc, and plow, and plant, and tie the fleece, and strain the milk. Somebody who'd bale a family together with the soft, strong bonds of sharing. Who would laugh, and then sigh, and then reply with smiling eyes when his son says that he wants to spend his life doing what Dad does. So God made a farmer.
Wow, that's so beautiful.
That's so powerful.
Now, I grew up in the rural America, and we used to have to burn our trash. You know, we didn't have trash pickup. We had three channels. We had a party line on a phone where we would literally, you know, pick up the phone and the neighbor would be on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And the other part was, I worked for $1.50 an hour at the farm to the left was in the winter at 5 a.m. and 5 p.m. We milked cows,
mm-hmm.
and it was a dairy farm, Holstein's. And then in the summer, I was a wrestler. So I thought baling hay was a good thing. you know, because you're lifting 100-pound bales all day long. And we had a beef cattle farm. Not us, not my family, but, you know, the farm down the road. And they would pay me, because I was a young buck, and they paid me, you know, $1.50 an hour to lift bales out of wagons and put them in the barn.
Yeah.
And one thing I understood was that these people were not afraid of hard work. That's one, number one. But number two, these people love to work with the earth. These people that were my bosses that ran these farms, they cared about what they did.
Yeah.
And this was hard work. This was really hard work. And so what Bloomberg did is absolutely insanely insulting.
Of course it was insanely insulting.
To everybody in America that works hard for a living. I just found it to be so completely disgusting.
No, it was completely disgusting. And you know, it's interesting. I think there was a paragraph from that rendition that got cut off. So I'm just going to read that those couple of lines that were, and it was in the middle of it. So, but I think it's worth repeating. God had to have somebody willing to ride the ruts at double speed to get the hay in ahead of the rain clouds and yet step in midfield and race to help when he sees the fire smoke from the neighbor's place. So God made a farmer. I mean, this is just such a beautifully written, powerful piece, and it's why we have parts of it in our introduction as we have the policeman.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it inspired me. My father actually turned me on to Paul Harvey as a kid, and I always used to just love when I would listen to Paul Harvey say, "And now you know the rest of the story."
Well, you know, at the height of the police anger about 4 years ago, My mother did the blue ribbons on the trees, and she came to the town hall meeting in the New Jersey town that I grew up in, and she read The Policeman. Yeah, so it's a very powerful message that we're getting from Paul Harvey. Well, tonight there's going to be another Democrat debate, and in this particular case, we've got a new poll that just came out from NBC and Wall Street Journal, which shows Bernie rising in the polls. So he now is at 27% first place. Then behind him is former Vice President Joe Biden, 15%, which he is down 11 points. I didn't mention this before, but Bernie is at 27% unchanged. Then in third place is the man we've been speaking about, former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg, who is 14%, up 5 points from the last poll. And again, as we mentioned on the show yesterday, 2 days ago, he was not qualifying for the Nevada debate, but he suddenly got in with a fourth national poll. So that gets him on the stage. So there will be six people on the stage. Then the fourth person in the race is Senator Elizabeth Warren, Democratic senator from Massachusetts, who's at 14%, who's down 1 point from the last time the poll was taken. And then in fifth place is former South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg, 13%, up 6 points. So he's also rising. And then after that, we have Senator Amy Klobuchar from Minnesota. She's at 7%, up 2 points. And then Tom Steyer is still in the race, although he will not be on the stage, at 2%, unchanged. And here's a name we haven't heard in a while, Representative Tulsi Gabbard from Hawaii. She's at 1%, and she's down 1 point. So I think we're going to pretty soon be hearing that some of these people are dropping out. So we've got the Democrat debate tonight in Nevada. And then on Saturday, we have the caucuses in Nevada. And then we have the next primary in South Carolina on the 29th. So there's a lot going on. It's going to be a lot to watch tonight to see what happens. And I think it's going to be interesting to see Bloomberg, because this is going to be the first time we're going to see him on the stage, right? So it's going to be interesting how he handles some of the questions, particularly in light of some of the remarks that he's made in the last week. You know, how is he going to handle if somebody calls him on the farmer comment or the factory worker comment or his comments on stop and frisk? How is he going to address it? What's his composure going to be? But the one thing that is happening clearly is that Bloomberg is spending a lot of money, and the money that he is spending is what is helping his rise in the polls. You're sighing. What's going on?
No, I'm texting Terry from Arkansas.
Yeah.
While you're talking. So Terry was talking about my $1.50 an hour for farming. And he says, "You got cheated," laughing out loud. "I used to get a quarter of bail." Yeah, I misspelled bail. I spelled it bail, like getting bailed out of jail, maybe.
Yeah. How did you spell it?
I spelled it B-A-I-L.
That's how it was spelled in Paul Harvey's speech.
But Terry spelled it B-A-L-E.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Maybe you're both right.
It didn't come up correct on my end, but it came up like I misspelled it, but I don't know. So he says, I used to get a quarter of bale with my truck to haul hay. I said, wow, I would have been rich because we used to do 10 wagons.
Wow.
And a day. And there was 110 bales in a wagon. And each bale was over 100 pounds.
Wow. So
I would go through a pair of farm gloves one day, maybe 2 days. And then your nostrils have hay up in your nose every day.
Well, that's an experience I didn't have.
Oh, yeah, man. No, I could tell you all the subtle nuances of baling hay. It was a hard job, but I always thought every bale I lifted was going to be a credit to my wrestling in the winter. You know, so
that's right. See, that was before.
That's
we
the
all,
way I thought. That's,
see,
that's the way
that
I
was
thought.
Your gym.
What?
That was your gym.
We didn't have. They didn't have. This was before Jane Fonda and the leg warmers.
Right.
I mean, this was. You know what I'm talking about?
Well, I mean, gyms existed for many. I mean, they were existing. You know, very early on in the 20th century. But the thing about it is the concept that everybody had to go to a gym to stay fit is a relatively new concept because people used to work outside. They used to do so much work. Who needed a gym?
The kids don't have, the kids don't know what to do today. My situation was me and Tubby Wade, my buddy, we would go down. There was this natural spring.
Yeah.
And the spring would go and form a stream. And next thing you know, our what we would do during the summer routinely.
Yeah.
Is build a dam better than the dam we built yesterday. And we would try to like hold the water and we would be like a fort. So we would spend all day building a dam.
You were little mini engineers.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so you're building this dam and then the water's getting deeper and we have to fight the pressure of the water. And we would build the dam higher and higher, higher and higher, and yet still higher.
Yeah.
The dam would start to leak. Then it would start to break apart. And by the time we would lose, we would always lose to Mother Nature.
Right.
That was the end of the game. That was the end of the day. But nice it was 6 hours later.
It's not nice to play with Mother Nature, they say.
And we would come across lizards and crayfish and all kinds of weird stuff. You know, it was fun. I don't know. Well, things have changed.
Well, things because you were forced to have an imagination. I mean, we had television and we had other things to do, but we still were playing outside a lot more than kids do today, and it wasn't as structured. And I think sometimes all the structure, you know, diminishes your imagination.
So Donald Trump's been really retweeting a lot of stuff, and I love the fact that he's got this mini mic thing going. I mean, you just don't want to go against Donald Trump because what he ends up bringing to the table is he gets this label. Like, I don't even think of Bloomberg now without saying in my head, mini mic.
Well, that's why he does it. And that's why people get pissed off about it.
No, but he's such a master at it.
Yeah.
You know, because it's so true, right? I mean, Mike Bloomberg looks like a little tiny midget. And so now, you know, this guy that's supposed to be this big New York billionaire, right? The mayor for 3 terms. And he's just a little mini guy, a little guy, little guy with little hands, you know, whatever. And so I'm reading through Trump's tweets and let's just see what he says here, because he's got a lot of tweets. I want to read them through them because we only have like 3 minutes left. And so we may as well just go ahead and do this because we can't start like a whole another line, right? So he says this. He says, Judge Jackson, I'm talking about Amy Berman Jackson.
Right? Of course.
This judge I cannot.
That's the only Judge Jackson we've been talking about lately.
Now has a request for a new trial based on the unambiguous and self-outed bias of the foreperson of the jury, who's also a lawyer, by the way. Madam foreperson, you're a lawyer. You have a duty and an affirmative obligation to reveal to us when we selected you the existence of these tweets in which you were so harshly negative about the president of the people who support him. Don't you think he wanted to know that before we put you in this jury? Pretty obvious she should get a new Pretty sure, obvious he should get a new trial, talking about Roger Stone. I think almost any judge in the country would order a new trial I'm not sure about Judge Jackson. I don't know. Judge Knapp, Andrew Napolitano, was quoting that. So Donald Trump requoted Judge Napolitano on that one. Donald Trump also said, these were Mueller prosecutors, and the whole Mueller investigation was illegally set up based on a phony and now fully discredited fake dossier, lying and forging documents to the FISA court, and many other things. Everything having to do with this fraudulent investigation is badly tainted and, in my opinion, should be thrown out. Well, isn't that basically saying, and if it's not, I'm going to give him a pardon? Wouldn't you say that?
I would say so.
Yeah. Even Mueller's statement to Congress that he did not see me become see me to become the FBI director again has been proven false. So Mueller lied.
Yes.
Mueller was lying under oath. He should be given the same treatment that Roger Stone was given.
Of course.
That means at the break of dawn, his door needs to be busted into. He needs to have a machine gun pointed at his face, and he needs to be served 9 years in prison. No, of course, that's ridiculous, right?
Well, it was ridiculous when it was done to Roger Stone.
That's what I'm saying.
The punishment did not fit the crime, nor did the capture of the alleged criminal fit the crime.
It makes me so angry.
And remember, CNN was all there to record it.
Yeah. So he says, the crooked DNC is working overtime to take the Democrat nomination away from Bernie again. Watch, I'm telling you, okay, here's what's going on here, folks, with the Bernie thing. And we got like 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. I think that they got a lot of dirt on Bernie. I think that Trump knows Bernie's the easiest one to beat.
Mm-hmm.
His plans don't add up to, you know, buckets, right? Nothing's adding up for Bernie. And then he got the wife with the school that went bankrupt.
Yep.
And all this other stuff. There's so much crap going on with Bernie. They don't even want to take him down. They want to build him up. And I think that the RNC and Trump want to, you know, put salt on the wound and provoke and say the DNC is rigging it. They're hurting Bernie again, right? And what ultimately they want is they want to basically say you know he's the winner. You got to elect him because this is going to a brokered convention in July because of what Bloomberg is going to do to buy things up. And I think that ultimately Trump would love to run against Bernie.
Oh, yeah, totally would.
And so that's where they're pushing those buttons. Anyway, we're out of time. You've been listening to The Scott Adams Show. My name's Scott Adams.
My name is Leonora Cravetta.
And we'll see you next time on the radio. Thank you all for listening. Bye-bye now.
Town in Tennessee, a long way from the suits in D.C., but close enough.